Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 151 of Wait All About It, or what I'm calling Coming to America, From Peasant to Professor, Ji Wu Jiang's Journey to WSU, about my conversation with the current recipient of the Washington Grain Commission's endowed professorship at Washington State University. It might not sound like it, but Chang's first and last name both begin with a Z. Ji Wu is spelled Z-H-I-W-U, and Chang is spelled Z-H-A-N-G. It's a name as common as John Smith in China, with fully 10% of the population responding to it. But it's a difficult one for Americans, myself included, to pronounce consistently. So throughout the rest of this episode, I'm going to use the nickname that has become Chang's failsafe here in the U.S. ZZ. Arriving in Pullman from Cornell University in 2014, ZZ is charged with aiding WSU wheat breeders Aaron Carter and Mike Pumphrey to make sense of an avalanche of genetic data in order to release more and better wheat varieties. It's why the Washington Grain Commission awarded him the organization's endowed distinguished professorship. I remember when Rich Koenig, chair of the Department of Crop and Soils at WSU, spoke at a WGC board meeting about how new technology had made much more data available to breeders. But making sense of it was another matter. Back in the Orville Vogel era of the 1950s, breeders could juggle the number of wheat variables in their heads, or at least on a piece of graph paper. That isn't the case anymore. Computers are used to keep track, sure, but a statistical analysis of the genomics of plants can find patterns that would be impossible for humans to see. And that, as you'll hear ahead, is ZZ's strong suit. Listening to an overview of ZZ's research is fascinating, but difficult to grasp if you aren't gifted with his abilities. I've worked with him several times on articles in WheatLife magazine, a task which has consistently illuminated how little I know. But it is ZZ's life story, not his research, that I find particularly compelling. He was a farm boy in China, born well before the country's opening to the world. His family's home had electricity, but no running water in a village of about 50 houses. On a little more than 2 acres, the family grew a variety of crops and animals, but they still knew hunger. Going to university was a relief because of the monthly food ration he received there. Given our recent focus on the trade war between the U.S. and China, I thought it could prove illuminating to speak with ZZ about what it was like to grow up in China and then come to the United States, where he is now a citizen. ZZ is one intelligent individual, but intelligence alone is not particularly noteworthy, especially at a university. As Albert Einstein once said, "The true sign of intelligence is not knowledge, but imagination." ZZ agrees, and one of his recent research efforts points to that imaginative spirit. At a holiday party at WSU several years ago, there was a game to match childhood photos of faculty with their grown-up selves. You can get the full story in the October 2019 issue of WheatLife, but ZZ used the party game as a springboard to imagine technology that can identify individual varieties of wheat in a field from space. The USDA was so taken with the idea, it provided ZZ and his team with a $500,000 grant to determine if they could prove the concept. I was grateful that ZZ agreed to do a podcast with me. As someone who spent years trying and largely failing to master French, the ability to successfully navigate a second language is nothing short of miraculous to me. As a 21st century China bears down on the U.S. for supremacy in the world, it's easy to forget how destitute the country was as recently as a half century ago. Say what you want about China and its practices today, Nothing can take away from the fact it has lifted more people out of poverty in less time than has ever been accomplished in world history. Ahead, you'll hear Zizi speak of his own hunger as a primary motivation before China opened to the world. It helps, I think, to understand that the Chinese approach nowadays is at least partially because the old days are still such a fresh memory. As a statistical geneticist, I thought that Zizi would point to the genetics of his ancestors as the reason behind his rise from a 2-acre Chinese farm in the country to an associate professor at an esteemed university. But ahead you'll learn, as I did, that intelligence isn't like eye color, in that it is not highly inheritable. Like most Americans, Zizi believes that hard work is the foundation of success, along with targeted encouragement. We began our conversation sitting in his Johnson Hall office on the WSU's Pullman campus on October 4th, 2019, with me asking Zizi to describe his life growing up.
So, like, each family, we receive some land from the government according to family size. We do have electricity, but we don't have running water. The entire village share one well, so everybody go there and carry the water. Like, I started about like a teenage, one of my responsibility is the supply of the water. So,
and so when you were 12, it was your job to make sure that the family had water.
Yes.
Uh huh. Yeah. And that, now that was the family water. What about the water for the crops?
So we do not irrigate, except for rice. So that one, we do use the water. Yeah, irrigate that way.
Were your family always farmers?
Yes. So until myself, my siblings left the village, and also my parents retired from the village. My parents still have their land. So then it was the lease to my neighbors. They are farming there now.
And what crops did you grow?
We grew up everything so that we need. For crops, we grow like a rice, corn, soybean, millet, then all kind of vegetables like a cucumber, tomato, potato, whatever we need to eat, then we grow them.
How many acres?
Acres, about like, my land, about like 2 or 3 acres.
2 or 3 acres?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you come to America and you see the size of agriculture that we have here. Yeah. Did it just boggle your mind?
Yeah, that's very different. Our is kind of small scale. We work everything by hand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you also had livestock?
Yes. Actually, the livestock is a kind of major like income for families. So we do raise like pigs. Then we have all kind of poultry, like geese, ducks, chicken, and also I have like rabbits. We have dogs, guard for the family.
And so how big was your family?
I have like 3 siblings. My 2 sisters, they are now all like a nurse. Then my young brother is an electronic engineer. I'm the oldest one.
You are the oldest?
Yeah.
Now, did you market your crops, or was this for subsistence, or did the government buy your production?
Yeah, government buy part of the production, mainly is for the rice. So our area like grow rice really well. It's just like one season every year, so the growing season is long. Then the temperature kind of good for rice to grow. So then the rice has more protein, the texture and taste are really good. So now, like the rice from my area is kind of a very famous brand in the whole nation.
Oh.
Then other crops, I do sell, like go to like a farm market, and then we sell some like vegetables. The majority, like one thing I sell is like a sweet sorghum. So I sell them whatever the leftover, then eat them. That's kind of my favorite. And I also sell eggs. So then for the pig, and we slaughter, we sell the meat.
So now you were born before China opened to the world. What do you remember about the period before the great opening?
Before the opening, so that's a kind of the opening is around like 1976 to 78. 78, I went to college. So before that one, I feel most is just like a small village. It has a similarity to other place, but I feel the most is from the village. And during that time, I feel the most I need to search for food, especially contain like protein.
I mean, were you hungry?
Yeah.
You were hungry, yeah. And you needed to search for food.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Interesting. And so after the opening, did the food become more abundant?
Yeah, after the opening, then I went to college. So then I have like a fundamental supply. I run like a 30 pound of food, like per month. Majority at the first like 2 years, majority is corn. So that's what I eat. Okay. Yeah.
Like a cow.
Corn. I eat like a corn in different format. Like in the morning, we make the corn flour, make a sort of steam bread. Then in the noon, make something, another flour. Then we cook them, eat that way. And in the evening, like eat sorghum. So.
Fascinating. Did you think of the United States as a child? I mean, did you have a conception that, you know, the United States was over here? And what did you think of the United States?
Okay, yeah, I do feel the one thing I know, like, I know the Earth is round, and I'm standing, and then the United States is kind of all the opposite, and we kind of do silly things with my friend. We try to dig a hole and try to reach the other end.
Well, so, I did that as a child, but I was trying to reach China.
Yeah, okay,
You just went back to China this past summer. When was the last time you went back to the farm?
A couple of years ago, I did like try to see how my farm, old house, looked like. And so then I just also stopped by, visit my neighbors. There is a few neighbors, they still live there.
How have things changed during the period that you have been in the States? I mean, you know, when you go back now, are you just amazed at the changes, or has it happened so gradually that it is just life?
Yeah, I feel like a change is dramatic. So I give you an example. I feel like this world kind of gets smaller. Usually, like from my house to go to my high school, that take a 1 hour walk. So because during that night I walk, so now just like a 5 or 10 minutes drive. So then I can see my school from that way, see my house. And also, big city are connected by high-speed train. For example, from the city, I got my first PhD, then to Beijing, where I work for the first time. So that's only take about 5 hours. So that means start leaving in the morning, then you can have a lunch with your collaborator together.
And how long was it before?
Long before, that's take like a whole day. It'll take a day and night, you know, about like at least 24 hours to travel from that city.
So it has gone from 24 hours to 5 hours.
Yes.
Fascinating. Yeah. So you are an immigrant in a foreign culture, and yet I have the impression that you get along very well at the university, and, you know, that's no small feat. It is difficult. There's lots of different kinds of folks at the university. What is the secret of your success?
Okay. Definitely, I'm still struggle on some issue. For example, if I sitting in a bar talking with you, for example, talk about like baseball, that's kind of not my like stress.
I don't talk about baseball either.
Yeah. So then there are a lot of things to share between the two countries. I feel that secret actually is not secret. It's just like work hard and also keep like a curiosity.
So talk a little bit more about the curiosity. I mean, do you have a curiosity about Americans and about how they think and work?
Yes, I do. Yeah. For example, like one thing, the curiosity, for example, find the difference between American and the time. I know how Chinese people work. For example, American, they have the schedule. So that's a very good habit. Now. So that's kind of the habit I don't have before, especially when you grow up in a village, everything just you put in your head, you do not look at calendar, try to follow that way.
So you're saying that in China, when you were young, you just put your head down and did the work, but here you make schedules.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what do you think is your greatest talent?
My greatest talent, I feel, is kind of a pattern recognition out of data, so fill the gaps.
When you talk about pattern recognition, your work involves numbers. Are you able to look at a page of numbers and see things that other people can't see?
Okay, so then if I like a printed number on the paper, so then I'm kind of same as others. So pattern is not recognized that way. So then we need to model this, see what's the input, what's the output, and with different model, then to try to recognize pattern that way.
Well, I'm glad to know it's a little bit more difficult than just looking at it. Growing up on a farm in the countryside of China, you didn't have as many opportunities as the average American does. Mm-hmm. What do you owe your intellect to? I mean, is it genetics? I mean, were your parents very smart people? Was it hard work? Or was it just luck?
Okay, so then I think about all kind of this reason, I feel like the chance due to genetics is really low. So the one factor is before entering high school, so there is a great pressure I need to go back to my farm and then help my dad to farming. Actually, there are a lot of my friends, they drop from school. So then my parents, they did discuss this a lot. Then they finally, they decided let me keep going. And otherwise, I will grow into like a totally different person. So from that part, it's just that decision make the difference, not from the genetics. And also from genetics study point, then we find the heritability, that's genetic, that is...
the inheritability.
Yeah, is very different from trait to trait. For example, some traits, they are very heritable, for example, eye color or hair color skin. But some of the trait has a very low heritability, and the intelligent is at a very low end. So from that point, I feel it's not due to like a genetics from parents. But there are other factors that do contribute a lot. One is you work hard, then other is the chance, how lucky you are.
Working hard, yes. Was there anybody in your life who encouraged you to continue on?
Yes, my parents, my uncle. Then there is also like a very accident, like the event, like my neighbor. Then he one time, like when he watched my friends and I play, then he just, I'm not sure. Definitely, he cannot predict the future that well. Then he just suddenly say, "Oh, I will be a person like will be very different from my friends in the future." Maybe he's joking, But I take that serious, sort of I get encouraged. At the end, I try to be different. I think that kind of like a seed, like a plant into me, that I let that grow. So mm-hmm. I mean, that happens.
Yes, oh, absolutely, absolutely. You work with computers an awful lot, and as part of your work, you develop algorithms that do much of the number crunching, and I've also heard you talk about machine learning. Now, you know, people in America are sort of afraid of computers and what the future means for us. Is there any part of the phrase, machines will learn to develop their own algorithms, that should give us pause? I mean, is there a reason that we should be afraid of what is coming at us? Because, you know, are machines going to exceed us at some point?
Yeah, I think this concern makes sense, as some of the machine learning use the same model that our brain works, that are called like a neural network. Now have a common name called like a deep learning. This technology help us in many like a positive ways, such as we can find more precise answers through internet. Currently, all the computer system need like a human coexist. They cannot do the work by themselves. And as human, we still have enough time to prepare if they can try to like replace our human. When we feel that coexisting is a challenge, we can start our defense. So that's, I'm kind of optimistic.
Very good, very good. So I remember when Rich Koenig, who was chair of the Department of Crop and Soils at Washington State, came to the Grain Commission and he spoke about the difficulty of making sense of all of the numbers that were a byproduct of today's modern wheat breeding. Now, it used to be that a breeder had 100 data points to make sense of, and today it's well over 1,000 data points. What exactly is it that you do for breeders?
Okay, I help a breeder in multiple ways. First, I develop a statistical method and computing tools so that the breeder can use them to find the genes of interest and identify the super rare like breeding lines. And second, I train their graduate student and postdoc to understand this method and learn how to use these tools to carry the job. And third, I do collaborate with the breeder. I try to enhance the breeding platform. For example, the satellite image project from USDA. So then we try to add additional information to our existing breeding system.
So will statistical analysis result in better varieties or simply getting wheat varieties faster?
Both. It helps breeders to develop a better variety with identified genetic loci controlling, for example, falling number. I'm also in the process to develop a fast and non-destructive method to measure the falling number now.
You recently received a large grant from the USDA to look at being able to identify varieties of wheat remotely. That is, to develop the capability, even from space, to say, this field is Otto, this field is Norwest 533, this one is WB570. Is that correct?
Yes, you are correct. I think the USDA found us this high-risk, high-reward project. Our team include winter wheat breeder Aaron Carter and spring wheat breeder Mike Pumphrey and remote sensing expert Sindhu Sankaran. If success, it will be a game change for both breeder and farmers.
You have an intuitive grasp of how to work with numbers and computers to solve problems. You are a black swan, a rare breed. Can you make sense of how a farm kid from rural China has found himself here in this office at WSU?
Yeah, I can summarize all of this into one word for that reason. That word is encourage. Yeah, remember the comments by my neighbor? He may be joking, so then He said, I will grow into a person that's very different from my friends. And I did not take that as a joke. I just take it as a belief, and then I make that happen.
It is surprising but also gratifying to hear how a brief interaction between Zizi and an older neighbor in his village wound up serving as the goal to which he directed himself. He took the man's word that he was going to be different from his friends and worked to make that future for himself. Those of us who are lately becoming the elders of our own villages might want to heed his neighbor's example and provide the young people around us with some words of encouragement. I hope you enjoyed episode 151 of Weed All About It, or what I entitled, Coming to America, From Peasant to Professor, Jiwu Zhang's Journey to WSU, about my conversation with Zizi, the statistical geneticist who is helping make sense of the flood of data that is part of modern wheat breeding. Please join me again next week for another episode of Wheat All About It!
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.